Hey folks, hey Sharad, how's it going, man?
It's going well, and after it's refreshing to have someone from the advisory bank today,
absolutely,
rather than a whole series of fintechs that we did.
Yeah, man, it's been a long relay of fintechs, right?
Yeah,
and I think the more and more we rant about it, the likelihood of having more fintechs on our show is going to go down, no?
I don't know. As long as people don't stop lending, nothing will happen.
No, absolutely. No, we shouldn't be very discouraging to fintechs. No, yeah. we would like more fintechs officially,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So today we have with us Harsh Bhutta. Harsh Bhutta is from Bhutta Shah and Company. He's a partner there. Welcome, Harsh. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Nikhil. Thanks, Sharad, for having me there.
Absolutely, no. The pleasure is all ours. So, Bhutta Shah & Company is a Bombay-based premier chartered accounting firm. These folks look very closely at auditing, taxation, advisory, as well as corporate finance. Before the podcast started, Harsh precisely said that, you know, direct tax is something that he looks at very specifically. So, today, obviously, Harsh, before we even start the conversation, I would request you to, treat us as complete amateurs here, as if we don't know anything. It's just 90% true also. We just fake things very well. So, because we are going to touch upon the theme of taxation within the realm of cryptocurrencies, which is probably the hottest buzzword, the hottest asset class, the hottest currency. You know, it's kind of beauty is in the name of the beholder here. People don't even know how to classify it as of now. And considering we recently had Idul Patel from Mudrex come on our show, Mudrex being kind of a small case type platform for trading cryptos, Harsh, what we really look forward today is to get your sense on the overall taxation and regulatory environment with regard to cryptocurrency, especially in light of some recent news which has been trickling in. The government has been a bit more clearer than before in terms of how they look at this particular asset. So, taking a page from our initial framework that treat us as amateurs and who don't know anything, would be good to first get the basics here. That where does crypto fit in the broader financial portfolio / planning framework of a typical investor within the Indian context, and then we can probably dig into it a bit deeper from a taxation standpoint.
Thanks, Nikhil. So, basically, cryptos, obviously it's picked up pace over the last few years, although, the first Bitcoin started, I believe, in 2008 or so. But at least India started making, headway around it in 2018. You would have heard about the RBI banning basically any banking services which is catering to cryptocurrency exchanges. Then the Supreme Court came in March 2020 and then overturned that ban. So, then it became legal. Although people were trading before that, but, after that, it was something which was completely legal. You were seeing a lot of ads on television. So, how much the cryptocurrency exchanges are being funded and, the kind of trading, at least the volume we hear are close to 10 crore in traders and investors. Not clear about that number. But there are a lot of people in India who are trading or transacting with cryptocurrencies. So I think it was a matter of time before the government came out with the crypto bill. They did come out with a draft in 2019. I think that draft was all around basically banning cryptos and penalties and prosecutions and things like that.
Yeah.
2021 was when November 2021 it was expected that they may introduce the bill in the parliament, right? But that didn't happen, and rightly so, because this is such a fluid space where there is so much going on and so many regulators globally are taxing and regulating cryptocurrencies in different ways. So the government probably wants to come out with something which is fair, and they don't want to probably come out with anything in a hasty manner. But I think what was great was to kind of, you know, at least get clarity on the taxation part,
mm-hmm.
Which came in, you know, in the budget on February 1. It was honestly widely expected that they will do it because, you know, the amount of transactions which are there, the taxman is not going to leave, you know, any of the investors.
Right.
So you know, and you know, that did bring a lot of clarity where, you know, they, you know, came in with a separate provision, which is 115DH, on taxing income from virtual digital assets,
right.
Is how they, you know, define it, right? And that's basically at 30%. So, you know, would love to share my views and my thoughts on, you know, how this entire framework, you know, is kind of currently put in by the income tax authorities. And then, you know, there are still a host of open issues, some which have been solved by subsequent clarifications and some still which are still open.
And, you know, when it comes to sort of crystallizing and getting into the absolute minutes, and we were talking before the show about, you know, offsetting losses from one asset to, but the way it's sort of moving and way these things are sort of coming in step by step, one by one, is that sort of natural towards getting into a, you know, full scale adoption of it? And these are all just minor stumbling blocks until you sort of get into a place where it's treated as like any other asset class, like is that sort of how it's moving towards? Because like you said, right, there's been a lot of to and fro, there have been revisions, there have been sort of feedback from the industry, and all this while a lot of institutional capital has sort of come in, VC-backed. So there's obviously a lot of people look at it as a sign of legitimizing the industry when there's private capital coming in, right? Like, but do you see this sort of slowly, step-by-step sort of moving towards a direction where it becomes sort of robust and becomes like the standard asset class, or you think there will always be a level of skepticism just because our entire history of finance has been rooted in fiat money?
Yeah, well, I think we are a long time away from that, you know, because cryptocurrency, you know, invariably, if you see the kind of messages which, you know, people in the government are putting out, right? Like, for example, you know, the deputy governor, you know, Mr. Shankar of RBI, he had mentioned that, you know, cryptocurrency is like akin to Ponzi schemes.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know, and there is no doubt about the fact that, you know, it is highly susceptible to money laundering, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there is no doubt about that. And today we are a country which is a developing country which has a lot of exchange controls. Money coming in, going out, mm-hmm. is highly regulated and monitored, right? And this is the kind of, you know, asset class which can evade, you know, because the way the blockchain technologies is there, it's impossible to figure out, you know, unless information is shared by exchanges, information is shared by stakeholders, it's very hard to figure out. So it's going to take a long time, and I think there will be a lot of regulations globally. Mm-hmm. You know, there are you know, global regulations in tax where globally most countries want to converge towards those regulations. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, you know, there is a BEPS program which is, you know, come out by the OECD countries, right? So I think eventually we will have global tax regulations around it, which is more or less in harmony, and which will also, you know, there will be a lot of information exchange between foreign countries, foreign exchanges, and the regulators, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I think it can be probably considered as a asset class, like a listed share or something akin to that, right? Till mm-hmm. then, I think there's going to be, you know, it's still very, very early days, but it's very nascent today.
Yeah. And this is just a very, you know, basic sort of question just to go through it. And this is something that even confused me. And I speak to a fair bunch of people who are sort of heavily invested, and taxation is one thing that they often get concerned about, or lack of understanding. Just, you know, from a very simplistic standpoint, there are folks who have sort of invested in crypto asset classes who have been invested for a while and have never really converted back to fiat money. So that conversion event has never taken place. The wallets are holding on to crypto assets, and they're just sitting in what they call, dark wallets. So essentially they're just sitting and they're growing, and there's trading activity happening there. There are like a bunch of platforms which offer you free promo coins in some other denomination, and you know, and they're all, it sort of takes a very currency route. Everything is, the prices are also denoted in Ethereum 0.002. How does sort of taxation, like, is it a function of actually converting into fiat to have a taxation event kick in, or how does one think about it?
Well, I think it's very clear, you know, in any tax professional or tax regulator's mind that, you know, wallet is basically your money, right? So, you know, today if you have any cryptocurrency in your wallet, the thumb rule is this, that do you have complete access to the wallet? Can you withdraw that money at any point of time which you decide?
Mm-hmm.
If the answer to that is yes, then basically that is your money. Today, if you have, you know, say invested 100 rupees, bought a Bitcoin, tomorrow that's increased to 500 rupees, that's fine. That's not a taxable event because you have not sold it.
Yeah.
But if you sell it and say buy Ethereum, you know, maybe the value has remained the same at 500, right? But you have had a taxable event because, you know, you have booked gains of 400. You may not have withdrawn it into your bank account in fiat, but that doesn't matter. So today I think this is the, you know, this is, and you know, it's very simple, right? I mean, you look at any listed security, right? That's exactly what you do. It happens in your DMAT account and the money comes into your bank account. That's why people probably believe that, no, that should be taxed. And, you know, this may or may not be, but mm-hmm. this is a very clear point. So there is zero ambiguity on this.
Mm-hmm.
People may feel that it's not very easy to track. But I don't think that is the case, and that will not be the case, you know, when you get a notice in the future, because, you know, the income tax have provisions which have very, very a long period, right? So they can reopen your assessment up to 16 years back, right? So, you know, there will be a time when there will be information which will be shared. Today also, at least the Indian exchanges are sharing information,
mm-hmm.
you know, with regulators, right?
Yeah.
So, similarly, that will happen for foreign exchanges. So, I think it would be prudent to kind of pay tax on any realized gains. And that's now what the tax provisions very clearly say.
So according to you, and as per the latest understanding, I mean, realized versus unrealized, naturally, but when it comes to realized gains, it doesn't matter if it's in fiat, even if it's in another cryptocurrency, that's a taxable event.
Absolutely.
Right. And coming to the second point, like when it comes to exchanges sharing data, I mean, obviously one is the, you know, centralized exchanges, you know, guys like WazirX, etc., etc. Then you also have a lot of decentralized exchanges, you know, which are like present offshore, and one has access to them. What do you think is the, you know, regulatory view on that entire equation? Because I think the real veterans of the cryptocurrency asset class, in any case, are going to be present more on decentralized exchanges rather than the, you know, on the centralized ones.
Yeah, so definitely, you're clear that it's going to be very hard for the government to figure out transactions from these exchanges. There is no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But I feel that, because see, you, there will be some point of time where you will convert, if you are Indian resident, right, you will convert that money into your bank account.
So probably for DEXs, essentially, once the conversion event into fiat comes, that's when things pretty much kick off, right?
You may be doing a host of transactions with, you know, decentralized exchanges. No one knows about what you're doing. You know, you're probably making a lot of money. But at some point of time, either in India, in an Indian bank account or some foreign offshore bank account, you will probably need that money. You know, and that's when the questions start coming, right? So yes, I mean, no one may know. That's a different issue. But if you are an Indian resident and, you know, you're based in India as per the residency laws of India, then your global income is taxed.
Right.
So it doesn't matter where you're earning it, where you're trading, what you're doing, but you have to declare your income. And if you don't, then there will be, you know,
severe
implications from income tax, and then, you know, a host of other regulators also come in, right, when there's foreign money involved.
Understood.
It's very interesting, and the reason, you know, the reason sort of it becomes a little counterintuitive for a lot of people is because all of a sudden you have these guys like Elon Musk and whatnot who are sort of even saying that you can use this to buy material now. So, and then all of a sudden that parallelism with equity sort of goes a little haywire, because like it's all almost saying like I can use my Asian Paints stock to go and buy a car. But there he's sort of saying, so then all of a sudden it's become an investable but also a sort of a currency kind of an asset which is traded for a service or a value, and that sort of makes it complicated. But like, you know, what I found interesting was you said that it's difficult, but it sort of can be done in terms of getting the processes in place. And, you know, when you look at sort of read about the purists of this, they sort of have a very, blue sky, but a very rebel kind of an approach to a lot of things, saying that, you know, it's sort of the way things will move forward and you don't need sort of centralized money. You don't need... people should be able to transact across the borders, which, in my view, is sort of extremely, extremely unlikely, at least in the near future, because they're real monetary policy tools which governments are unwilling to give up. But how do you see sort of, even India sort of talking about digital coin and sort of taking, and how do you see sort of that converge, like in terms of using a global standard of currency when it comes to crypto versus each central government issuing their own digital assets and sort of merging them? Like, what problem does that solve?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, I think today you are seeing, what happened in the pandemic, right? With the US is printing money left, right, and center, right? Because it's the US dollar, the reserve currency. You could do that, right? And I do believe that, going forward, it could be 20 years from now, it could be 50 years from now, there could be a point that there would be a digital currency which has a limited supply, which is globally accepted. But, it's going to be very hard for countries to give up control, right, on their currencies. So I think we're a long way away from that. I think today what probably cryptocurrencies will do is more think of it as an investment or an asset class, rather than any kind of medium of exchange. Mm-hmm. I think that we probably are a while away from that.
So I mean, if I ask you for outlook, do you think like within the Indian context, probably there will be a time when we'll have like a digital yuan equivalent here? Right, where basically RBI pretty much keeps custody and issuance rights and control rights, and crypto would be looked primarily as a as an asset class, which at the end of the day would have to be converted into fiat to purchase anything of tangible value, and that's that, right? I mean, we won't see like a Walmart equivalent moment in India where a Flipkart or Amazon says that you can buy stuff through Ethereum.
Yeah, I mean, currently the way RBI is very, very strict about its control. I mean, just look at the OTP program, right? And it's really good for consumers. But the way that is going, they are a very long way away from making payments in crypto.
But like, even though in the US, in the West, in a few geographies, there is some precedent which is coming on there, right? I mean, there are big companies, corporates, which are openly, talking about their adherence. I mean, it's just one announcement away from also discarding it. But I mean, there is some amount of precedent which is coming that way. I don't know transactionally how big that is yet. I don't know how many people are actually buying, cars or buying groceries or coffee through Bitcoin. I think Starbucks also said it, right, at some point in time. But do you think that would that may lead to some sort of a convergence in that direction, or you feel that globally with the Ukraine-Russia conflict and all the negatives of crypto also coming out, governments are going to be even more wary?
Well, I personally feel that this is something which is even if it is implemented somewhere in some of the Western countries, in India it's extremely hard.
Yeah.
See, like US is it has no exchange controls.
Yeah.
I mean, it has zero exchange control. So technically, they don't care if someone is buying dollars, selling dollars, doing whatever they want with the dollar, right? Individual is not allowed to send more than $250,000 in a financial year.
Yeah.
So there are limits around it. So how you will be able to regulate that, is going to be a very, very challenging affair.
Yeah. Harsh, and this is just out of curiosity, do you guys personally, or is it a firm level, are you getting a lot of inbound requests for accounting services for crypto assets? Like, are people sort of, are you seeing an uptick in people sort of reporting some, at least a part of their income in crypto gains, or are looking at portfolio management services or something like that? Are you seeing an uptick in that at your level?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we don't do any portfolio management services, sure, but yeah. we as a you know, chartered accountancy and law firm, we basically, over the last 1.5 years, we kind of actually have a team who does cryptocurrency taxation.
Oh, wow.
Because it's mm-hmm. something which is quite complicated, to be honest. Mm-hmm. It's not that simple. Mm-hmm. And people are completely clueless, right? So we are getting a lot of clients, who have so there are different sets of clients, right? So one are people who are actually doing it as a business, doing trading in a private limited company or any other corporate setup where they're doing, for example, arbitrage between exchanges, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Of cryptocurrency. Then you see, and the biggest use case I would be is that regular people filing the income tax returns, with cryptocurrency gains, and they probably don't know what to do. Usually, it's not reported anywhere, so right. They just feel it's okay to probably not do anything about it. But more and more there is an awareness. And it's better to be fully compliant, because not being fully compliant has huge risks in this kind of tax regime and even the regulatory regime which is present today. So yeah, I mean, we are doing a lot of work around cryptocurrency taxation.
Right. Speaking of like cryptocurrency taxation, what are the if I were to ask you the checklist of 5-6 things on which now we have full clarity. One is obviously you mentioned the 30% taxation. If we want to build a laundry list of taxation rules which as a regular retail investor one needs to be cognizant about, how would we frame that?
Right. Yeah. So one is I'm going to talk about a few of these aspects, and please interrupt me when you want to know more. So basically, one is that the budget, the finance bill, which is introduced in the budget, has defined a virtual digital asset.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
So it's basically, it's like an information or code which is generated through cryptographic means, which has some inherent value and can be transferred, traded, or traded electronically.
Right.
Okay. So this is broadly a definition. It also includes a NFT or includes any other digital asset which is notified by the government. So broadly, it's a very wide definition,
right,
of cryptos. But still, there is a lot of room in this definition also for interpretation, right? Because, for example, the NFTs, right? I mean, NFTs is something which there could be millions of NFTs, right? And how do you define that particular? How do you notify it? How do you? If it is not notified, then what is it? Then what framework does it go in? So there's going to be a lot of questions around that. But at least there's some definition which has been given.
Right.
Second is that the framework which puts a flat 30% tax rate on a virtual digital asset. And one thing I'd like to add is that as an example, suppose if your income is below 50 lakhs for the financial year, your tax rate would effectively be like 31.2%.
Right.
And suppose if your income is say above 5 crores for the right. for the year, this is not necessarily including the crypto gains.
Right.
Your overall salary, capital gain, etc. Then your tax rate can go up to 42.74%.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So basically, that's the range.
Right.
That's the surcharge and cess. With that, that's the range. It's very clear that which was in the February budget itself, that there'll be no deduction in respect of any expenditure.
Right.
Other than the cost of acquisition. Okay. That's a very crucial point. And then there are some open points around this point, because then there would be there could be questions like when you say cost of acquisition.
When you say there won't be any deduction aside from the when you mentioned that there won't be any deduction aside from the cost of acquisition, are you talking about like if one is a crypto miner and one has invested in servers and systems, etc.?
No, not at all.
Then what are you referring to?
I'm referring to basically, suppose, for example, you have bought an Ethereum coin at say $1,000.
Right.
And you sold it at $3,000. Then the deduction which you will get on the $3,000 is the $1,000.
Right. Sure.
You will pay tax on the $2,000.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
But the question there would be that for example, if you have say exchange fees,
right,
or say brokerage fees or some commission, you know, whether those are tax deductible. They may not be a huge amount,
mm-hmm.
but it may become a big amount if you're trading, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's something where there is no clarity today. Right now, what the Act says is cost of acquisition. That's the third point I wanted to make.
Right.
The other aspect is there is no set off any losses booked, say, 1 lakh rupees of loss.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot set it off like you can, for example, in certain other heads.
Yeah.
You can't set it off against, say, a salary income or, say, interest income or any capital gain, etc.
Right.
That's something that you can't do, and you also can't carry it forward. So that losses lapse.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of it.
Understood.
What do you think is the rationale behind sort of doing it within the same asset class? Like, let's say losses from Ethereum cannot be offset against gains from, let's say, a Solana. Like, is that fair though? Is that what's happening? And why? What do you think the rationale behind that is?
You know, in February was very unclear about this aspect.
Yeah.
Whether you are allowed, it's called an intra-head adjustment,
sure,
where within the virtual digital asset class, mm-hmm. you have, say, you gained 5 lakhs on a Bitcoin and you lost 2 lakhs on Ethereum, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Then can you pay tax on 3 lakhs,
mm-hmm. right?
Because that's what ideally should have been the case. But, this last week, further amendments were introduced to the finance bill of February 1, which has clarified this issue. This was a very, very hot issue. I've got, you won't believe the amount of calls I've got asking for clarity on that. And now it's very clear that you will not get that loss. You are not going to be allowed a set off of loss of one PDA with the another. So that's now amply clear. So this is an example. If just to make it very clear as to what I'm saying, if you gained 5 lakhs on a sale of Bitcoin and you lost 2 lakhs on sale of Ethereum token, you cannot set off the loss of sale of Ethereum token with a gain on the Bitcoin. So mm-hmm. effectively, you're going to be paying tax on 5 lakhs at 30% plus surcharge plus tax.
Yeah. We were discussing this internally, right, Nikhil and myself, and we were saying, and like we were just trying to compare it to the kind of stuff that we know. We're like, oh, it's like almost saying like, oh, you know what, if you make gains in a cement stock, let's say ACC, and you lose a bunch of money in Hero, then you can't offset. That seems so counterintuitive.
Yeah.
But the other angle is, oh, but can you sort of offset losses from equity into bonds? And then we sort of went down that rabbit hole, about asset class versus investment. This is obviously, I mean, again, correct me if I'm wrong, Harsh, but this seems like slightly regressive when it comes to the general tone of saying that we want to encourage businesses built on that or build a community. This seems, when you're talking about sort of legitimizing it with putting it under the tax umbrella and then sort of doing something which is so central to incentivizing investing, it seems a little counterintuitive, right? I mean, it seems slightly regressive. Is that fair?
So, Sharad, honestly, I don't see, the government incentivizing or feeling that they need to kind of promote cryptocurrency. I think this government is very clear that they want to regulate it, they have to regulate it,
mm-hmm.
They have to tax it.
Mm-hmm.
But this, this provision which came in the budget is absolutely putting it in the same lines of gambling. See, I'll give an example.
Yeah.
There is a section called 115BB in the Income Tax Act.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very old taxes any winnings from gambling, card games, horse racing, etc. Okay. Now, this particular provision is almost exactly the same as what has come in for cryptocurrency. Because there is no, in that section also, there is no deduction allowed for any expenditure. Here, at least you get a cost of acquisition. But therein, there is nothing which you are allowed as an expenditure. And it's a separate framework. So you cannot set off the losses against interhead, you cannot set off the losses at all. So, you know, the government has basically put it on the same pedestal as gambling, effectively. You know?
Yeah.
So it's not about, you know, encouraging it or discouraging it. It's just about the fact that they feel that this is not something which they look at as a security or an asset class. So, and I think that's going to take, you know, a long time to change.
And how does this, you know, compare to conventional asset classes like equities or bonds, etc., in terms of, you know, carrying of losses from one towards other heads? I mean, just to kind of, you know, get a comparison.
Yeah, I mean, see, first of all, capital gains on listed securities is its own framework. Right? Where you are not allowed to take that gains and, you know, or take those losses and set it off against, say, interest income or a salary income.
Yes.
So that is definitely the case. But within that head, within say long-term capital gains and long-term and long-term capital loss, right, you're allowed to set off.
Right.
Secondly, they are taxed as capital gains.
Right. So
it's a very different thing altogether. Like, for example, one big thing is a holding period. You need to decide if there is a holding period, it could be short term or it could be long term.
Right? Yeah.
Similarly, the tax rates, you know, are at least in listed securities, 10% for long term, 15% for short term,
right,
or 20% for long term, which is non-listed,
right,
and then 30% for, you know, short term, which is non-listed,
right.
Right. So here, everything goes A into the highest tax bracket. And there also, you know, even in short-term losses for assets which are non-listed, you get intra-head set-off, right? So
right,
you at least get the set-off within the same asset class.
Right.
Here, there is no such set-off. So right, that's a huge deterrent, I believe.
Right. No, that's super fascinating in the sense that, you know, the fact that there is also not a holding period nuance that typically goes against the treatment of something as a financial asset to start with, right?
Correct. And you know, I'd also like you all to, you know, understand what globally people do, right? I think that's something which is interesting to understand, because you know, India is probably, you know, one of the only countries in the world who's done this.
Right.
Where they kind of have it as a separate framework where there is no set off of losses available, etc., etc. Like, for example, in the US, cryptocurrencies are taxed as capital assets.
Right.
So basically, the long term capital gains are right from 0 to 20%,
yeah,
depending on your tax slab, right, holding period, right? Similarly, in Singapore, also they are taxed as capital gains, and Singapore actually doesn't have any capital gains at all. So it's basically zero. There's no tax in Singapore. Gains, capital gains, right? And then there are some countries which have unusual things, right? Like, for example, Switzerland has a wealth tax. It has no capital gains tax. But the wealth tax is, like, you know, between like 0.14% to 1%.
Right.
You know, similarly, like, say, UK taxes that capital gains tax is about 10%. So you know, what happens is that you see that, and, you know, I'm not even going to talk about the tax havens, right? Because there's no tax there. But if you see, most of the leading countries in the world, you know, have a relatively progressive tax regime around cryptos, where they are taxing it as a separate asset class, and they are not, you know, they are not kind of taxing it at the highest taxable rate and not allowing set offs, carry forwards, etc. So that becomes then very difficult, you know, for an investor to look at it as an asset class, because then otherwise it becomes very prohibitive in terms of the taxes.
But like, why so much suspicion here, in your view? In the sense that, you know, we hear a lot of narrative around, you know, security risks when it comes to cryptocurrency, money laundering, when it comes to cryptocurrencies. And there's also a fair amount of commentary on how, you know, fiat money is no less susceptible to the same issues. And whereas in cryptocurrencies, essentially, there is, because of the way the basic blockchain infrastructure is laid out, at least there is some level of traceability, which in case of fiat is not present, right? I mean we have heard phishing scams which happened in the US. What was that, Colonial Pipeline or something, right? I mean, where there was some amount of ransomware in which crypto was used as payout, and all that money was actually recovered, right, at a later stage, because probably because it was crypto to start with. So what do you think is the driver behind the suspicious or aggressive take followed by the authorities in India? Whereas there is a fair amount of counter narrative that the conventional currency is no less vulnerable to those threats.
Yeah, see what happens, is that the central currency, has a level of, say for example, if you are remitting monies through the banking transactions, and everything is traceable and trackable. Obviously, if something is, in cash or black money, there is a physical risk, of carrying it and all that, right? Here, because it is digital, and actually because of the way it is decentralized, and it's not possible to find, basically who has sold a particular cryptocurrency, who has purchased it, unless it is done through an exchange, right? So I think that's what I think the government does not want, that they don't want to give up that level of control.
Right.
And also considering that, our exchange controls, regulations are very strong. We've had a situation in 1991 where we were literally had no foreign exchange.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Today the government is very clear about the fact that, we have today about $600 billion in dollars. In a foreign exchange treasury, and the government is very clear that they want to very heavily regulate that. Otherwise, I mean, for example, one way is that you just open the liberalized remittance scheme to much higher limits than it is today. $250,000 is a very small limit, right? But they don't want foreign currency leaving the country. Mm-hmm. Other than through regulated kind of laws. So this is, this is something outside the regulation. So it's and it's also hard to kind of track and pin down. So I think that's something which, the government is not comfortable with. And it may take a long time for them to be comfortable with that, because, our controls and, even foreign exchange, sharing.
Yes.
I think all that's going to take a long time, I think, globally, for the entire world to kind of agree on certain frameworks to share information, so that cryptocurrencies are not, are more easily acceptable, across countries.
Mm-hmm.
And I also feel that, it's unfortunate that the blockchain technology is so fascinating and it has so many use cases, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, right from smart contracts, DAOs, and the metaverse. I think right now everything is painted, in one brush stroke, right?
Yeah.
That, this is what it is. So I think that's also a change which will come, where certain aspects of blockchain would be encouraged by the government, and then certain aspects which may be more susceptible to money laundering and all might be frowned upon.
Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking, if there was like an index fund of cryptos or ETFs of cryptos in India, what a nightmare it will be from a taxation standpoint.
Yeah.
I mean, just kidding. Probably they won't. They will never be the way things are going.
Correct. So that's broadly okay. Well, one more thing which I kind of didn't cover was that, and this is also something which is very very difficult, to do, is that there's going to be a TDS regime. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So this is applicable from 1st July 2022, and basically there is an onus on the person responsible for payment of the consideration to deduct 1% TDS.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is going to be a nightmare, right? Because you know, if you have done a transaction to the exchange, then who's liable to deduct the TDS? You know, whether it's the buyer or whether it's the exchange, you know, and you know, what would be the value also of this tax? Because what happens is that there are transactions which are part cash, part you know, barter, you know, or it is a gift, you know. So the valuation becomes another issue, which could come in, that on what value do you deduct it. And the third most important issue is that suppose if it is, you know, an exchange, right, or it is, you know, it is say part cash, part exchange, and the cash component is lower than the TDS amount,
right,
then how does the buyer deduct it? I mean, the buyer, you know, cannot pay money out of his own pocket to deduct TDS, and then also deduct TDS, you know, it'll need to have the PAN of the person he's paying to and all. So I don't know how this will be enforced, because right now the provisions say that the buyer or rather the payer has to ensure that the tax is paid. So you know, how they will ensure it is you know, it's going to be very, very hard.
Right. I mean, I think a lot of people, I mean, who are kind of going down this road might, you know, kind of plead ignorance. And then once the liability comes and the associated interest comes with it, that's how things will stabilize over the long term in terms of, you know, figuring out what obligation stands from a particular transaction.
Correct.
No, Harsh, this has been super... fascinating, and obviously your perspective on the particular asset class coming from a taxation standpoint is very, very unique and different from how we have tackled this particular theme on our podcast to date. So no, thank you so much. This was super fun, and we definitely like in this particular matter, I think we were amateurs.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, effectively most of the stuff that you shared with us on the episode is pretty new information. So that way we definitely had a blast.
Yeah, and we sort of typically view taxation as a cost center, right? I mean, that's the amount, that's the cost of making money. So it's, and there's obviously a little bit of inertia to even learn more about that subject just because we don't like it. So it's fascinating, and it's good to know about all these things. And like you said, I think we believe like over time there'll be more and more clarity. And it's just something so new and growing at such a fast speed. So it's very hard to put the regulatory angles all in place at once, I guess, right?
Correct.
But you know, one last thing that I would just like to ask is that usually when it comes to regulations, you know, we've seen that pretty frequently within financial services, that typically, you know, all stakeholders, or at least the main stakeholders, are brought on the same table. There are white papers, and there are, you know, comments, opinions, recommendations taken in, and that's when the rules come out. In case of cryptocurrency, are you seeing that? Like, are you seeing, I mean, we keep on hearing, you know, guys like CEOs of AzireX and all those people, you know, kind of stating or making, you know, comments on a daily basis about their own outlook. But we are not very sure of what kind of stakeholder engagement is actually going on at the ground level. Because obviously the rules which have come out, considering how conservative and, you know, regressive they appear to be, it doesn't seem like the market has been accounted for here.
A decent amount of you know, representation is happening to you know, the exchanges, you know, to particularly the exchanges, which are well-funded, and you know, they have good professionals working for them, who are trying to appeal to the government as to, you know, how they should approach it. You know, there are also obviously, you know, the government is also, I understand, benchmarking against, you know, what is happening globally. No doubt about that. But, you know, finally, you know, the way the current income tax provisions are structured, you know, it's definitely a very conservative tax regime. It's definitely not at par with global tax regimes. So that's going to take a while to change. And even aspects like GST, right? I mean, today, you may have read a few days back, you know, GST authorities, you know, they recovered almost 96 crores of unpaid GST liability from about 11 cryptocurrency exchanges.
Yeah.
And, you know, these are all like, you know, there are certain aspects of the transaction, which because it's not defined,
yeah.
Obviously exchanges are not very clear as to whether they should pay it or not, and they don't end up paying it. But at least transaction fees, commission, brokerages, trading fees, they're very clear that GST has to be paid. Luckily today we are not in a position, we are not in a situation where GST is talking about taxing transactions P2P.
Yeah.
GST on the transaction per se, right? Which is entirely possible because today if you look at even foreign exchange, right? If you draw corollary to foreign exchange, when foreign exchange when it is traded, within India also there is a composition scheme and there is a certain tax on it in GST. So that's also something which is still very ambiguous. There is really no clarity on that, and hopefully it remains that way, because that will just become completely prohibitive for any cryptocurrency transaction.
No, I mean this is, and it's bad business, right? Effectively, if retrospective provisions come into the picture on transactions which happened like up to 16 years ago. to be very fair, that's why I sometimes wonder, spend a large amount of my early professional years in the UK, where regulatory sandboxes are just such a prevalent concept, when it comes to any new fintech or any financial innovation, usually is followed by a regulatory sandbox period where a select number of providers are allowed to do business in a regulatory, in a more laxed regulatory setting, while everyone can catch up and figure out what's what before coming out with a more rigid framework. Whereas in India, I think everything, there's always brute force trauma followed by retrospective retraction of that trauma. So I think we are headed in the same direction here.
I think at least thankfully this government has been clear and showing that they don't want to do retrospective taxation.
Yeah.
They have corrected what happened in the Vodafone case and other cases where there is retrospective taxation involved.
Mm.
Hopefully when we do see assessments of previous years, years before 1st April 2022, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think I would hope to see that, authorities take a liberal view because there was no clarity. People have offered cryptocurrency income, in usually ways where it is mostly considered as a capital gain asset. I mean, we have also advised our clients to kind of do that because, that's ideally the way it should be taxed,
right?
If it is not a business. Then it should be it should be a capital gain transaction, and that's what most countries globally do it. But because there was no clarity and people have taxed it that way, I hope that doesn't change, and they don't want to kind of enforce this provision in a retrospective way, because that will just lead to a massive amount of litigation. And here all the lot of individuals. People who don't have a lot of income and they can't afford to kind of have litigation on this aspect would be covered. So I hope that they don't do that, because then that will be that will open a Pandora's box.
No, I mean I hope the government also shares your perspective here, and thank you so much, Harsh. This was very enlightening and very interesting. And we learned a lot. And with this, probably we look forward to another episode in the coming week. And thank you so much. This is Nikhil Arora.
This is Sharad Tupran.
Signing off.